This is a podcast from RTE Radio.
Okay, I'm off to start the engines now.
Hello, and welcome to a very special quantum leap that sees us all at sea. We're on board the Marine Institute's research vessel for the day, the Celtic Voyager. That was Jason White, chief engineer, and as he said himself, off to start the engines.
Hi, good morning. My name is Fergus O'Hare, captain of the Celtic Voyager. We are now setting up to proceed out to sea. At the moment, we'll start a passage plan, which is basically putting our distances and courses into the computer, which will plot us all the way down as far as the Arklow Banks and then on to Rosslare.
My name's Andy Wheeler. I'm from the University College Cork. I'm the chief scientist on board, and I'm a lecturer in geology. My research in marine geology, which is why I'm here.
Dublin Port Radio, Celtic Voyager. We'd be ready to go for the bridge at 0645. Is everything okay?
Yeah, Eastlink can be ready for 0645. So call Eastlink when you're approaching and then call me when you're clear to bridge.
Yeah, okay, we'll break away in about 10 minutes.
It's just before dawn on a gorgeous autumn morning. The tide has just passed low tide. It's starting to flood. We joined Celtic Voyager at her berth in Sir John Rogerson's Quay in the docks. We're now slowly making our way downriver. They've just lifted the Eastlink toll bridge for us and given us the green light. That's our last barrier before the open sea. We're heading out now, the first day of a special 5-day mission that is chasing data that will explain to us the evolution of the seabed of the Irish Sea, and we'll be looking also at pollution coming out of the Avoca River, and also about the various habitats in the sediment and the wildlife that exists in the sediments in the Irish seabed.
Sea crossing stable to sea for the next 48 hours. Dublin to Holyhead, mostly slight. Rosslare to South Wales, slight or moderate. Cork to South Wales, slight or moderate.
Well, we've just left the what you could call the gates to Dublin Port, the Poolbeg Light and the North Bull Light at the end of the causeway. We're moving out into open sea. I can feel the boat moving a bit more under my feet now. And we're on the bridge, which actually is a very comfortable bridge. Andy Wheeler, you're the chief scientist on board for this mission. You're from UCC. You're not a Marine Institute scientist. Tell me, first of all, about this Bright Sparks competition.
The idea the Institute had was to try to get the students, the young scientists, if you like, in Ireland, involved in marine research, and for them to put together a proposal, to write the proposal on a competitive basis, to come up with project ideas that would feed in to their ongoing work. So there's two kind of objectives. One is a training objective. The students are very much here learning different techniques, learning how the vessel operates, and getting involved in types of work that they wouldn't necessarily do themselves because they're helping other students.
Now, when you say young scientists, just to clarify for people who think of the annual young scientist competition in January, we're talking about young researchers at university. We've got eight people on board, I think, isn't it? Four of them are PhD students and four of them are undergraduates, and they're from UCC and TCD.
That's right, yeah.
And they're the winners of this Bright Sparks competition, which the Marine Institute ran this year for the first time, offering 5 days sea time, which I think is worth something like $30,000. To scientists. So what are the different objectives for this 5-day mission?
Okay, we've got quite a few objectives. And I guess to encapsulate that, we're looking at pollution in the Irish Sea coming out of the Avoca River.
And why the Avoca River in particular?
The Avoca River is connected to a lot of the metal mines, the old metal mines up in the Wicklow Hills, and is one of the most polluted, or is the most polluted river, naturally polluted river, in Ireland. So we want to know how that pollution is feeding out into the Irish Sea.
Okay, so that's one of your objectives,
that's
right?
One objective. Okay. The second objective is to look at how parts of the Irish Sea have evolved through time. So we're going to do some mapping of the Irish Sea, surface mapping, and also looking into the seabed. And the third objective is to look at where organisms live on the seabed. And this feeds into a wider habitat mapping, project, which fits in very well with the evolution of the seabed project. So we've chosen a couple of key areas with different types of seabed, different types of sediment, different types of current. We're going to look at what organisms live there, and from that we can feed that into a bigger database and start extrapolating to the rest of the Irish Sea to get a better, more high-resolution picture of where organisms are. We don't want to waste any of the sea time, so on the way we're going to run the multi-beam echo sounder that maps the seabed, and we're going to specifically run over areas that we've mapped before, because we want to see how the seabed has changed between surveys. She down, Jason.
Andy, what's happening?
Just told Jason to lower the multi-beam head. So the echo sounder that does the seabed mapping is held up inside the vessel when we're in shallow water. We've just headed out, we're in deeper water now, so we're going to lower this transducer below the hull of the vessel, so it's in some nice clean water away from all the air bubbles under the vessel, and then we're going to start logging, so we'll start mapping the seabed from now on. When we head a little bit further out, then we'll take a sound velocity profile to calibrate it. So it's down now, is it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So do you want to start logging?
We'll
get some data.
And we're actually in the dry lab at the moment, or I think that's what it's called. We're in the middle of the boat, and it's a room just below the bridge, and it's full of computer equipment. It's a nice big room. Dr. Fabio Sacchetti from the Marine Institute, who's one of the technical scientists on board for this mission, is with me. Fabio, there's lots of screens showing lovely, pretty pictures. Can you just tell us some of the things we're looking at?
Well, first of all, we call it dry lab because we try to keep it dry all the time. It's full of computers, and what we're trying to acquire as many information as possible about the seabeds.
And what we're looking at is a picture of the spikes on a blue background.
It's basically, the blue background is just because it's a color, and it's telling you that this at the moment is flat. What it's telling me is that basically it's flat here, there are no rocks. And this is bathymetry information is telling me that we have about 22 meter water across the nadir of the ship. It's not only a single beam, it's an instrument that gives you an overview across the ship for, at the moment, about 70 meters each side of the boat. And some other instruments, this one is called the EA400, it's a hydrographic echo sounder, basically. It still gives you information about the bathymetry.
The depth of the water.
The depth of the water.
So it's reading 23 meters or thereabouts.
23 meters. Okay. And then we have, this is full-grown navigation system, so you basically control all the navigation input and output. So everything, basically, that all the position, the GPS, and all the information goes through this computer and are locked in this computer. And to, later in the day, we're going to probably try to use the boomer. The boomer is something more in a geophysical field, basically it gives you information what is underneath the seabed, so information about geology, different layers of sediment, and you can see rocks or stuff like this, even 50-60 meter underneath the seabed.
Fabio, this is one of two research vessels that the Marine Institute has, and as I understand it, although it's 30 metres long, which seems to me quite a big ship, it's very much the smaller of the two, and you normally spend more of your life, as I understand it, on the bigger of the two. Tell me about the two vessels and the differences between them.
Yeah, the Marine Institute, as you said, own two vessels, the Celtic Voyager, this one that is 33 metres, and is the smaller one. Then we have a new one, it's a 4-year-old Celtic Explorer. It's 65 meter long and is newer and it's beautiful. It's a state-of-the-art vessel that is all new equipment. It's pretty much the same installation that you have here, but the space you have available in the dry lab and in the wet lab as well, it's huge, so you can run many instruments at the same time. And we run different sort of research activity on these vessels. And
I presume the bigger one can go to sea for longer, can go further out and do deeper work. Would that
the
be one of
bigger one can go everywhere in the world, and she can stay out up to, I think, 45 days without any need to go inside any harbor. So it's a big vessel, and you can run any sort of really research activity. I'm mainly involved in the new project, Infomark project. It's just the follow-up after the Irish National Seabed Survey. It's the biggest mapping project in the world. And
you're mapping the seabed?
We are mapping the seabed for different purposes. One of these is to update the nautical charts, but also to... The purpose is to map everything, all the Irish economic zone, basically. And the new Infomark is a more... the new project, the Infomark is called, it's more interdisciplinary project, so we hoping to give more information to everybody in terms of, I don't know, fisheries information, oceanographic information, and obviously seabed information, geology, etc.
Judging by your accent and your name, you're not originally from Ireland.
I'm from Donegal. No, I'm joking. I'm from Italy, and I was working as a hydrographer before.
What's a hydrographer?
That means everything related to nautical charts, acquisition of bathymetry, seabed information, navigation systems, GPS, etc. And yes, I was working before after my master, and then I just got the job in the Marine Institute because it was the biggest project in the world in terms of hydrography mapping. So I said, why not? And here I am.
Here you are. I think the noise in the background is the winch, but tell me what's happening now.
Okay, we're just lowering the sound velocity profiler. We're going to lower this through the water column, and it's going to measure the changes in the salinity, temperature and density of the water, which tells us how sound velocity varies. Different parts of the sea will get different sound speeds, and we need these to calibrate the multi-beam echo sounder, which is going to map our seabed. So, and we do this every now and then, just to make sure that we're getting really good data and we know exactly where each echo is.
And it was a piece of equipment that looked about a metre long and a canister that was, I don't know, a few inches across or something. You're not going to leave it down there, are you? You're going to take it back up again then?
No, we free-fall it down to the bottom, and it relays data back up straight into a computer, and then we put that profile into the multi-beam echo sounder.
So that we've taken the probe back up, winched it out, we've unhooked it, we've brought it into, is this the wet lab we're in now, Fabio?
Yeah, it is the wet lab.
And so when it goes down overboard and takes the measurements, those measurements are kept, it logs it, and then you upload the data when you get it back on ship.
Yes, indeed. Okay. There is a processor here and it logs the data, hopefully.
Okay, you've plugged it in.
It's a trigger. Okay. Turn on the instrument, and now I just have to check in the computer if it works.
Okay, and then it'll go back into its hard case for
this
safekeeping.
Box for when we need it. That's easy enough.
So here we are now off the mouth of the Avoca River at Arklow. It's taken us rather longer than anticipated to get here, several hours in fact, because we've been going against a strong southeasterly and a fast flooding high tide that has delayed us. But the plan now is to grab samples of the sediment that's coming out from the Avoca River into the sea at various stations or various points at a distance from the coast. We're going to come in first and then back out taking these samples using a grab sampler. It's a smallish device with a scoop the size of, I suppose, a beach bucket that will drop under its own weight down to the surface of the sea, take the sediment, bring it back up so that the team can analyse it on board.
So we're working our way towards the Avoca River. We're about 20 metres water depth at present. We're going to get a bit closer, see how close we can get, and we'll see how, if we can trace that pollution source as it comes offshore, and how it's getting incorporated into the sediments, particularly toxic metals, arsenics, leads, cadmiums, these kind of things, which are bad for human health and also bad for biological health. We can't see these in the sediments that we're sampling. So at the moment, we're just collecting the samples. But when they're analysed in the labs, then those concentrations will come out. And we know that metals are coming down the river. We know they're being dispersed into the sea. The big question is, are they getting trapped in the sediment and reaching concentrations that could be highly toxic or maybe not? Maybe they're not that toxic.
So let's go inside now and see what's happening inside as they study the sediment they've just brought up.
I'm Fionnuala MacBreen, and we're just inside and we're processing the sediment. So what we've done is we've taken a photo of it with a ruler for scale and the sample number in the photo. And now we're just going to bag the sediment and then we're going to freeze it because it's going to be taken back to the lab. And Niamh Walsh, an undergraduate student in Trinity, is going to analyse it for metals to see if we can see how far the pollution down the Avoca is affecting the Avoca estuary. So Niamh and Cora are just pouring it in now. My job here on the boat is to look after the sampling. So we're taking sediment samples at the moment, but later we'll also be taking sediment samples, which we're going to sieve so we can look at the macrofauna. So that's the biology in the sample, and we're going to sieve that through a 0.5mm sieve. Macrofauna are animals that are living in the sediment. Well, they live outside the sediment as well. We're going to look at the ones inside the sediment. They tend to be quite big in size, so anything over 0.5mm is what we're going to look at. If you get smaller than that, you're talking about myofauna. An example of macrofauna would be mussels, little worms, crustaceans, anything that we find that's alive. Okay, we're taking photographs of the sediment at the moment. We have the ruler in it for scale so we can tell what size the things in the photograph are. We also have the sample number in it so we'll be able to know which sample we were looking at when we go back to look at the photos. We're just going to put it into the sample bag now. So just swish it around with the water to get it. So the sediment's actually quite shelly, but there's a little bit of sand and mud mixed in as well. Here we go. So Corey's just going to close the bag now. And we're going to put it in two bags because it's always safer in case something leaks. Then we're going to put it in the freezer so that we can see the metals properly when we go to analyse them, because if we don't put the sediment in the freezer, it will start to decay and stuff, so it's just easier to freeze it. And then when we go back to the lab, we'll dry it at 105 degrees before we analyse it for the metals. What we're doing is we're taking the samples from different stations. We're trying to take them on a transect as we go into the harbour. So that's taking different stations along the line so you can see how far the pollution is coming out from the harbour, and whether once it gets into the marine environment, is it dissipating and maybe it's disappearing, or is it staying in the sediment for a long time. So we're going to take about 5, maybe 6 stations going in towards the harbour, and then hopefully we'll get 2 further out on either side. Okay. Niamh, could you do me a favour? Okay, when we get to each station, can you just write down the depth for me? Because we have guys up above taking down the coordinates on the bridge. If you could just write down the depth and the rough latitude and longitude as well, just so we know where we are. Is that okay? You can hear when the grab goes down. Sure.
We're up on the bridge now, and we're just moving to these various stations where we're going to take these samples. It's quite busy here. There's lots of yachts on a race coming out of Arklow, so we're having to pick our stations carefully. Safety is always first. So we're just manoeuvring. We're just coming on to the next station now and about to take another sample. Okay, yeah, I mean, if you look at we've got a map here on the bridge with these waypoints. These are positions that we've marked on the map. It's an electronic map. And we put in the coordinates where we want the samples, and they appear on the map. And what we can also see here is where the vessel is. So we can see the vessel moving, and we can navigate to those points. So now we're just moving the ship closer to one of these points where we're going to take a sample.
Navigating around the harbour mouth here is basically windage tide, you stop, but then you'll start drifting all over the place. Plus, we have a lot of yachts, and it's very busy here today, being a Saturday afternoon. So, let's keep looking at everything. We're very close to the beach, and we'll have to try and get these stations as quickly as possible. As you can look there, you can see the tidal rip of the river coming out. You can see the black water against the white water, but that's the discharge from the river.
That's it, we've taken our last sample now. We're going to leave Avoca and Arklow and the yacht race behind us. We, as you've already heard what the students are doing on board now with the samples, and we're already underway for Rosslare. And we hope to make Rosslare in a few hours' time. We've put Arklow way behind us now. We've put Tara Hill behind us. We're approaching Rosslare. And as we go, we're mapping. And this is part of one of the other objectives of this mission, which is to understand the formation of the seabed and the deposits there, and also the evolution, how the shapes of the seabed have evolved in the last 10,000 years since the end of the Ice Age. Andy Wheeler, we're mapping as we go. Now, that's partly because no time is wasted. Sea time, ship time is precious, so you use every minute. But what exactly are we over at the moment, and what are you mapping?
Okay, we're approaching an area of interest where we want to deploy some equipment. And this part of the seabed contains some quite unusual sediment bedforms, or if you like, dunes on the seabed, for use of a better word, underwater sediment bedforms or dunes.
How big are they?
They're quite big. The length of these is about 200 metres or so in length. They raise from the seabed about 30 or 40 metres off of the seabed in relatively deep water, about 80 metres water, and they're straight crested on the top. They're very, very sharp top to them. They have large scour pits on around them, on the ends, on either side of them. And these are intriguing to us because they're quite unusual. We haven't seen these kind of features before, and we want to know a little bit more about them.
And you've got I don't know, it's not a photograph, but it's an outprint from a mapping, is it? We're looking down on the seabed, and they're quite prominent on this. They look like triangular shapes because of the way they formed, do they? And some of them look quite big. How many are there?
Well, there's quite a few. I mean, on this map here, we've got about seven or eight. But we're finding them in quite a few places in the Irish Sea. The more we look, the more we find these features. But we don't really understand how they've actually formed. This is what we want to find out. We have an idea. We have a theory.
You want to tell us the theory?
We want to test it. Well, the theory is that the tides in the Irish Sea, particularly in this part of the Irish Sea, are quite unique in that the ebb and the flow tides were about at the same strength. So we have very little residual tidal flow, which means that if you're moving sediment backwards and forwards with the tide, it can start to heap up. It has nowhere to go, so it piles up. To test that, we want to put down a current meter. We want to put on the seabed next to one of these bed forms and measure the speed and the direction of the current over a whole month and see if we really are getting very little residual flow, and see if we're getting the flow strengths that match the grain size of the sediment that we're finding on these things. Now, we've towed video cameras over these. They're covered with sand. We tried coring into them, which was very difficult because they're very steep-sided, and we failed to core into them. But we did get some gravel, which is making us think that they may have a gravel core, which to my sedimentological mind is even a little more confusing. I would expect them to be purely made of sand. So one of the other things we'll be doing is taking a seismic equipment, which allows us to look into the seabed to see if we can see into these. But they're quite enigmatic.
I like the notion that there's an enigma at the bottom of the Irish Sea just off Rosslare.
There's quite a few enigmas in the Irish Sea. And what's happening at present is marine survey technology is getting much, much more sophisticated, and we're getting much better views of the seabed. And as we do that, as we get a clearer picture of what's on the seabed, there are more and more surprises.
Well, Rosslare is coming now into view, and actually the sun is setting, so it's been a very long day, but a fascinating one to see how marine research is actually done at sea. It's been a long day, and for some of us, a very queasy day. I'm myself still feeling a bit green at the gills. We'd also have heard more of the younger researchers, but some of them have been sadly confined to their cabins because of conditions, and others of them are actually taking a day's sleep in their cabins because they're due on watch at midnight for the second shift. And that's one of the realities that I've learned about marine research, which is that it's a 24-hour round-the-clock operation, and that's because ship time is so expensive. We'd like to thank the Marine Institute and Captain O'Hara and his crew for facilitating our visit on board the Celtic Voyager and for their tremendous hospitality during the day. We'd also like to thank Andy Shearer from UCC, who was the chief scientist on board for this expedition, but especially thank the young researchers, the bright sparks from University College Cork and from Trinity College Dublin, whose mission this is. The specimens and the data that they've been collecting today and that they will then go on to collect over the next 4 days will give them something to analyse over the coming weeks and months, and it's going to add considerably to our knowledge of and understanding of the Irish Sea. We'll be back again next week at the same time, but from dry land, and until then, slán tamall.
Quantum Leap was presented by Mary Mulvihill and produced by Peter Mooney.
You've been listening to a podcast from RTE Radio. To hear more podcasts from RTE, visit rte.ie/radio.